chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We have quite a few news clips that we're going to play tonight with our commentary. We're going to set them up with a little commentary before, and then maybe make some comments after we actually play the clip, and then we'll move on to the next one. There's a lot going on this week with the president, with a very, very inflammatory remark that has been taken out of context and so forth. We're not going to touch on that too much tonight, but we're going to get into some things that have been plaguing, you could say, the old Obama administration, and all of this Hillary campaign, and all of this intrigue that's been going on. This first clip coming up was last Friday night with Sean Hannity and Sarah Carter. And I'll tell you what's important is Sarah Carter has been right on top of this story, blowing the lid off of the FISA court and so forth, and she makes some very, very startling remarks in this clip coming up right now. So listen to this very carefully. And she's saying that that the dossier, she ties that into the FISA courts also. So anyway, this is important information. We must take special note of it. So here we go right now.
Sarah, because you have been on the forefront this week, we now know that the dossier, bought and paid for by Hillary with salacious lies, was used to get a FISA warrant against...
Well, yes, we now know that it was either in part used or it was a significant part of the FBI being able to get the warrant to spy on Trump and people within his campaign. But Sean, when you're looking at the dossier, and I think actually leaking Glenn Simpson's testimony actually backfired on the Democrats. I mean, it really did. You look at that testimony, you see to yourself, first, Glenn Simpson said there was a source inside the Trump campaign. That's proven to be false. Now, what people have corrected that version of it and said, well, no, he was just talking about George Papadopoulos in London. Then you find out that Glenn Simpson wouldn't answer any questions as to whether he was pushing this dossier to the media. He kept stepping back. He wouldn't answer it. Then we find out he didn't even verify the information in the dossier. And when you look at all of this, knowing that the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC actually paid for this dossier, and that the dossier itself could have been part of a ginormous, a huge disinformation came by the Russians. I mean, it's clearly there's a problem.
That was Sarah Carter with Sean Hannity, and there's dangerous situations. Now, coming up next will be Sean Hannity with Dershowitz, and he's going to give some of the fine legal details here about entering evidence to the FISA court and how critical that can be, and what are the legal details there and idiosyncrasies of entering something like that. Here he goes in just a second.
Professor, let me go to you. You make some really good points as it relates to the partisan aspect of all this. Now, I'm a conservative. I'm a proud conservative. I don't hide any of that. But we learned a lot that the fix was in. I want to use this analogy, that the fix was in. Poor Bernie Sanders and his supporters, they had no shot at all whatsoever. And even Donna Brazile admits that. Then you have Comey and Strzok. I don't believe I've ever heard of a case where you write exoneration letters months before you interviewed the people involved in an investigation. They didn't do the investigation, but they're writing an exoneration. Then it seems with the Russian dossier that they're trying to put the fix in there by using bought and paid for Russian propaganda, we now learn. And then you take it a step further, and that information was put before a FISA court and a warrant issued. As a constitutional scholar, I hope you are as afraid as I am about these issues, about the corrupt nature of all of this, and our constitutional rights in jeopardy here.
Mm-hmm. I am very much worried about that. That's why I called for, right from the beginning, an impartial, nonpartisan commission of inquiry to look into every aspect of the last election. Every aspect.
Agreed.
What the Russians try to do in terms of the Democrats, what the Russians try to do in terms of the Republicans. This is a bipartisan issue. Every American suffers when the Russians in any way try to influence the election. Look, I don't think the Russians try to influence the election necessarily in favor of one candidate or the other. I think they try to influence the election in terms of destabilizing the American political system. And that's why having partisan inquiries by congressional committees doesn't work. That's why having a special counsel who operates behind closed doors doesn't work. We need an open investigation commission. This is too important to all Americans to leave to any kind of partisan advantage.
Let me follow up with the dossier. It was partisan, bought and paid for. Remember, Christopher Steele didn't come on board with Fusion until Hillary and the DNC were paying for it. But that dossier used to obtain, at least in part, maybe significantly, as Sarah's reporting, to get a FISA warrant on a opposition candidate and a president-elect. Mm-hmm. Seems like a Fourth Amendment crisis here in many ways.
Well, I think it would be a Fourth Amendment violation if the material in the FISA warrant were known to be false. Now, under a case called Franks versus Maryland, it's not enough under the Fourth Amendment for it to be wrong. It has to be known to be wrong. And so, again, this should be looked into. Every fact should be investigated. Mm-hmm. Nobody should be afraid of the truth. Let the truth come out. Let
we'll
the American public decide.
I disagree with Dershowitz. It would only lengthen out these investigations. I think they need to get a special prosecutor appointed as soon as possible. And they've got to get on top of this thing and get this thing done. And a special prosecutor would not only be able to break up the existing false investigation on Trump, but it could establish a path on trying to go, you know what I mean, in a time sense, a good timeline sense in going from one exposed scandal, you could say, to another. Now we have a recent interview with Barack Obama and David Letterman, and it's just a very short interview, 24 seconds, but it really begins to set up what Hannity and Newt Gingrich are going to talk about that follows. So listen carefully.
What the Russians exploited, but it was already here, is we are operating in completely different information universes. If you watch Fox News, you are living on a different planet than you are if you... listen to NPR.
Well, they really laugh. You know, that's that peanut gallery out there. And both sides suffer from this. Both the left and the right are controlled by the upper level. That's where Trump went in and started busting up this control mechanism that the rhinos have had for years. And, boy, that's why the mainline Republicans have come out along with the Democrats against him. But anyway... That exemplifies really, there's a division, left and right, Democrat, and it's a very, very strong, and it's becoming more polarized. But anyway, listen to what Hannity and Newt Gingrich say about this ongoing battle. It's very, very insightful stuff tonight.
Anyway, here with reaction, the author of the best-selling book, Vengeance, former Speaker of the House, Fox News contributor Newt Gingrich. You're laughing. I'm laughing, too. I forgot the good old days. There is some truth in what he's saying in this regard. I think we have a series of scandals, and looking at Devin Nunes today, that the abuse of government surveillance by the FBI is so bad, and all that we're uncovering here is so bad he's right. The mainstream media, you know, they want to destroy Trump, and they loved him. It's that simple.
Look, you and I know each other a long time. So I'm going to spend some of your money. Why don't you offer $100,000 to create the Barack Obama Fox News Sean Hannity scholarship if he will come on the show with you? That is
done.
Such a funny, look, that's such a funny
done.
Segment. Well, I'm just telling you, I listened to it and I thought to myself, this guy is so whacked. And today, I mean, he still doesn't get it.
He doesn't.
And he'll never get it. Look, many, many years from now, in a nursing home or a nice retirement community, Barack Obama will be still living in a fantasy life. He'll think that Iran should really wanted to have a deal. He'll think that high taxes really work. He'll think that welfare is a good deal. I mean, what you just put together is as, I think, funny a statement of who Barack Obama is as I've ever seen. And it captures this sense of being out of touch with reality.
Let's talk about the media in this sense. They spent a year, Mr. Speaker. There's no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. We play the montage of Democrats saying there's no evidence of collusion. And yet we do have evidence of unbelievable instances of abusing the weapons of intelligence and surveilling, unmasking, and leaking raw intelligence. We know that the fix was in with Hillary and Bernie. We know that the fix was in Comey and Strzok. Rigged, they had an exoneration before even an investigation. We know that Hillary paid for a dossier full of Russian propaganda. We know that dossier now was used to get FISA warrants to spy on an opposition candidate and a president-elect and his team. And I'm not even talking about Uranium One or Debbie Wasserman Schultz. There are two realities here. And the media has chosen a reality of partisanship and conspiracy theories. Either that or I'm wrong. But they didn't think Trump could win, and people like you and me were right.
Look, what you have to understand, I'm actually working on a book called Trump's America, trying to explain this, because it is so unbelievably hard to understand if you're a normal person. Over here is a left-wing corrupt establishment which sincerely sees this entire fight as a function of identity politics in which if they lose, they will disappear. Over here are the rest of us who are thinking, you know, a lot of these ideas are really weird. I mean, Obama thought if you gave $100 billion to Iran, they'd be nice people. Obama thought it was terrific that we had more people in food stamps than ever before. You go down a whole list of these things. And this is really a definition of life and death. And so what you and I are living through is a period where the old order, the establishment that inherited, and this is important to understand, they inherited Walter Cronkite. They inherited Edward R. Murrow. They inherited the old Harvard. And they inherited all these great centers of authority and responsibility, and they have gradually turned them into left-wing nutcake positions. And so the truth is we're in an identity fight in which if we win, they disappear. If they win, we disappear. That's why what you and I experience, because we're great friends, we're great warriors in the same cause, and we both understand if we lose, we will literally disappear. On the other hand, if we win, America will continue to move forward as the freest country in the world.
Why?
And I think that's why both of us fight.
You're describing it perfectly, to be honest. At least nobody, I think, really wants to know what truly motivates us, but that's a separate issue. But as a practical matter, I can I can shoot off a litany of Obama statistics and what his true record is on the economy. You mentioned Iran. You think he can bribe murdering thug dictators and, you know, not mention radical Islamic terrorism. And then in a year of Trump, you can compare policy significant changes with tangible results, but the media won't talk about any of it.
Look, you would think if Barack Obama was a sincere person who genuinely cared about African Americans, when you got a report this week that we have the lowest black unemployment in years because the economy is starting to work. Trump's cut tax cuts, regulatory cuts, pro-business attitude is starting to work. You'd think that having the lowest black employment, lower than any time under Barack Obama, that Obama would say, this is great. He can't afford to believe it.
No.
Nancy Pelosi can't afford to believe it. Chuck Schumer can't afford to believe it. Because if it was true, they would disappear.
Mr. Speaker, we always appreciate you being with us. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
That exemplifies right there the differences in the two groups. And Adam Schiff, who sits on the Intelligence Committee and so forth, he's so partisan. And here's a little clip of what he said this week. So listen to this.
Do you have any evidence that this investigation going on into the Clinton Foundation being conducted by the Justice Department and the FBI, do you have any evidence that it's being done for political reasons? How do you not know that it's a legitimate investigation? I thought that the whole idea was we're supposed to believe that the FBI and the people at the Justice Department are men and women of integrity.
Well, we are. But if this is a decision, and I can't confirm even whether the Justice Department is conducting an investigation, I'm just going on the published reports. But if they are investigating Hillary Clinton, it doesn't take a genius, let alone a stable genius, to see why. It's not because there's some new evidence that's come to light. It's because they're being badgered by the White House to do it. You simply cannot explain it, I think, any other way. And that is, I think, deeply disturbing. And that's not in isolation. If you look at the decision by the Justice Department to release these private text messages during the pendency of an internal Department of Justice Inspector General investigation, that's unprecedented. And that similarly is a nod to the White House. And I think that these cracks that we are seeing in the independence of the Justice Department ought to concern every American. We ought to be thinking in Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike, beyond these 3 years, what damage may be done to the institutions of our democracy. And that ought to be far more important than any party concerns. But right now, it certainly doesn't look that way.
That was Adam Schiff, and he's quite a very deceptive individual. He speaks out with these very, very glorious liberty and democracy, and with this is being played out and all that. But all he is very propaganda. He's full of propaganda. So that's so much for Adam Schiff. He's not going to help us resolve any of this. He's just trying to help, you know, cover it up. He's not going to, he's on the Democratic side. He's just cover up artist is all he is. But anyways, we've got coming up next is a good clip here. Rob Dew interviewed Jason Frank. And Frank had some really bad experience with Facebook. This is really, really a good look into Facebook and what they're all about right now. Here we go.
I'm going to go to my next guest. Actually, he's going to be with us for the rest of the hour. Jason Fick. He's a guy who's worked Facebook to make money for himself. And then, because he didn't want to play ball, and because he started promoting Republican candidates in the last election, he started having his pages taken away. And it's ramping up. He sent me this last night, this news feed, and I read this. I said, this is the death of Facebook. They're basically going to kill themselves with this move. They're going to start censoring hardcore. It's going to be overt. It's going to be everywhere. And it's going to hit everybody. And by doing that, people are going to leave Facebook. So, Jason, what do you make of that analysis after reading what we heard from Comrade Zuckerberg?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on, Rob. Obviously, we've been talking about this for months, you and I. I guess it was what, 3 or 4 months, like 3 months ago, give or take. Mm-hmm. And I predicted all of this, every single thing that was coming out. I've been in this for close to, I guess, 7 years now. I watched the rise and fall of it. And obviously Facebook has changed so dynamically over the years. We've gotten to a point where, you know, at first it was a free for all. Anybody could say anything. And it was honestly a lot of fun back in those days. Then what happened is that, and I think that this was what caused the change, is that they realized that the individual voice is very loud. That people talk amongst themselves, especially like conservatives these days. We're talking amongst each other, and we use this as a town square to be able to present ideas to our own, you know, peers and so forth. Well, I think along the way, they realized the strength of that is very scary. They don't want people to be able to talk amongst themselves because we can organize. And as soon as you start to get into a situation where they organize, they realize they had to gain control of that. I know that that's, I'm just sort of giving you the back, like the inside way that this works. When they gain control of essentially what people were talking about, they gain control of how the minds work of the individuals. This is essentially what mainstream media is trying to do, is they're showing you this over here, but they really want you to pay no attention to this over here. It's the bait and switch thing. You guys were just talking about that. But your analysis is right. They are, and I had said this for a number of years, is that they took out all of the good content. They tried to turn themselves into a news network, which, in my opinion, bit them in the ass.
Yeah,
they
backfired.
Literally, had they let it just be memes and funny stuff, nobody would have paid attention. It would have buried all of this stuff. Now what they've done is they have mobilized so many people, and this is the danger. And I'm going to tell you, I can forecast Facebook. It won't ever go away. It won't collapse by what you said. It's not like it's just going to go bankrupt and disappear. That I don't see happening. It's too big. But what I do see happening is people are now getting tired of it. They're going, no, I'm not going to be forced ideas that I don't believe in. And the people at Facebook don't understand that that's what they're doing to their customers.
They're telling people what to think. We're about to go to break. Yeah, we're about to go to break. This is what's happening right now. They are trying to guide her, and they tried it in this election with Hillary Clinton, and it didn't work. And now they're going, well, we're going to ban everybody from talking. We're not going to let anybody talk unless it's about their stupid cat. We'll be right back. Jason Fick, a social media entrepreneur insider who is basically trying to warn people about what's been happening with Facebook. And it's coming. It's coming down the pike. But I love it. I think it's great. All right, we are live. We are live here at the fourth hour. And look, this Facebook censorship is nothing new, all right? But they have literally written their own obituary, and I'm going to get to that. But here, back in 2011, one of our own reporters here, Jared McBreen, was sent an email by the Facebook team not to post his political viewpoint. So back in 2011, they didn't want you talking about politics. And here's what part of the email said. Be careful making political statements on Facebook, McBreen was told in the email. Facebook is about building relationships, not a platform for your political viewpoint, unless you're a scum-sucking liberal socialist. Then, hey, say whatever you want. Don't antagonize your base. Be careful and cognizant, which they spelled wrong, of what you are preaching. And then we have, a few years later, Facebook CEO caught discussing the censorship of anti-migrant posts at United Nations Development Summit Saturday while speaking with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. She's like, you must make them stop talking about the migrants. And he says, we're going to do some work on that. We're going to work on it. Okay, the hot mic caught him. Okay, we have him working with China, censoring people. And then here's his obituary right here. He wrote his own obituary. A lot of people do that. A lot of famous people like to write their own obituaries. Well, here it is right here. And here at the bottom, I will read it in Mark Zuckerberg voice. Now, I want to be clear. By making these changes, I expect the time people spend on Facebook, and by some measures of engagement, will go down. But I expect the time you do spend on Facebook will be more valuable. And if we do the right thing, I believe that it will be good for our community and our businesses in the long term, too. Okay. basically what he's doing, he's going to kill the news feeds. Something that they touted. Oh, hey, we're going to be bringing you news. We're going to be bringing you news. There he is right there, Cyborg Zuckerberg. And then we have this. Hacked emails show Eric Schmidt played crucial role in Team Hillary's election. So you got Google and Facebook basically teaming up against the entire American populace to put Hillary Clinton in the presidency, and they failed. And why did they fail? They failed because you out there, people out there spread videos, people out there went to protests, people out there took their phones, hopefully horizontally, and shot video. And people did it over and over again, and we didn't stop. Okay, and Donald Trump's not perfect. He's going to do some things we don't like. But he's a leagues better than Hillary Clinton and what she would be doing right now. We would never be under the out from over the globalist thumb if we had Hillary Clinton. Jason, your comments on what I just said. I want you, and I also want you to talk about how they started hitting you in 2012. And then.
Yeah, I was actually about to do that.
Yeah, they've been attacking you for a while, so you're used to this. This is nothing new to you. But for the rest of the people out there, it's all about to end. If you have any sort of income coming from Facebook, it's all about to go away if you're a content creator. Go ahead, Jason.
Here is the biggest mistake. Okay, so 2012, right? We'll rewind. You said 2011, don't go over your political views. 2012, I had a page that was specifically, it was anti-Obama. I didn't want him in there, right? So on the eve of the election, a million fans gets deleted. Coincidence? No, I don't think so.
Payback.
Now, they shut my opinion up.
Exactly.
That's what they did. And the funny thing is that, you know, I had an opinion back then, but I shut up because I couldn't afford to lose my income stream. So I got out of politics entirely, and I went down the meme road, you know, and just entertaining people. Then they decided that the meme road wasn't, you know, sufficient, you know, we don't like that either. So let's make it a news network. And then the news network, managed to actually put Trump into office because they screwed up on actually how big a wave that they would get out of the conservative views. Trump gets into office and they go, huh, man, nothing's worked. Let's just shut Facebook off. That's basically what he just said.
Yeah.
We're going to shut it off. Well, nobody's going to keep coming there if there's nothing to see. It's, and think of it in this analogy, right? And this is the easiest way to understand this. Think of it like your favorite TV, you know, channel, a whole channel, right? The channel has shows on it. The shows are interesting. Do you go on it to watch the commercials?
No, nobody does.
Right? Nobody. Now, if you take away all of the popular shows, which they actually do on most channels, it's amazing. Like Boston Legal, it was a top grossing show, but it was the wrong demographic. So they killed it, and it was an amazing show. If you start killing shows, eventually you have too many commercials. Well, my feed is almost every other thing is a sponsored something, video, ad, whatever. Now, I don't care how effective your search criteria is and how much you know that I like this or I like that. It doesn't matter. I don't want to see buy this, buy that, buy this, buy that, and I can't see anything else. I literally refresh my feed and I see the same things I already saw just then. So the same videos that I was already shared, I'm seeing them again. Then I'm seeing videos of stuff I don't even want to see. I see stuff I'm even blocked on. Now, that was 2012. They shut a million fans down. It was kind of one of those, wow, I just got beaten up by them. But nobody cared because Obama made office and none of the news networks cared. So I sort of went forward. The whole nation didn't know. And this is legitimately what the turn of the social media tide is, exactly what I'm about to explain to you. Nobody knew because nobody understood social media. They don't understood the power of it. They don't understand what an individual voice is. Well, the social media company, you know, Facebook and Twitter and so forth, they caught on quicker than obviously the rest of the people because it's their job. They started stifling people's voice as it grew, and it got bigger and bigger over the years. And, you know, I didn't want to be the one that went out there and said, there's a couple of revelations, obviously, you and I have talked. There's some things that I've done that are monumental and nobody even knows, because I didn't want to be the figurehead because I knew that they would just take me down. So ultimately, this voice that we created, they kept like crushing it down, and then they had algorithms that actually catch words. And then if you use the wrong words, now they originally built that because people were saying like and share this. So if it said like, share, and comment, it pretty much crushed your reach instantly. There are so many things that you just can't do that they just decided. Well, it fast forward, 2016 rolls along. Sure enough, they shut down 14 million of my fans. 14 million. Those ones, we got a big problem because they didn't want Trump in there. And they did their best. Catastrophic loss.
Yeah, we're showing some of your feed right now, how it just drops off to nothing.
Now they would tell you, and this, like he said, they put this nice smile and they put the felt glove over the hammer.
As they're hitting you in the face.
Yeah, and they say to you, oh, nobody really wants to see your stuff. Well, I was on the rise there, and then there's this catastrophic loss. Where did it go? It was simple as this. They don't want people to see what they actually want to see. They don't want you to see it.
No.
So the thing is that they now, what the problem is, and it's kind of like critical mass. They have hit a point where guys like me that were in the industry, we knew this 5 years ago. We knew it was coming. I had to talk to you about, I started to back out of the whole Facebook game because the social media game, that game is dead. And when that dies, when people cannot survive on there and the content isn't enough content for everybody to be able to see, you will have all commercials. And when you have all commercials, guess what happens?
People leave. Yeah.
Exactly.
People leave. People stop going to it. And so it's a self-implosion. They're self-immolating right now, which I kind of celebrate. I'm glad Facebook is going to die because, hey, they even admit spending too much time on there is bad for you. Facebook does that. They have social scientists and sociologists literally trying to figure out how to make you depressed and hate yourself. So we'll be right back with our final segment of the fourth hour of Overdrive. Thanks for watching. Infowars.com/show is the live stream you need to send out to everybody you know. And do it! Don't wait for Facebook to do it.
Okay, so there's a couple things in here. You made a statement about, it's good to see Facebook die. Facebook shouldn't die. I mean, it really is a good platform for everybody. But one thing that I would say directly to Mark Zuckerberg and to the upper staff of Facebook is that realize one of the problems you have right now is you've hit critical mass. Too many people know that you're screwing them, that you're just shutting them down. That won't work. It will. We are going to push back. They said that about the NFL. That didn't work out so well for them, did it? I said, but I want you guys to, and I said this to you, Rob, last night, is I want everybody to understand where we're at right now is, and I warned you and I told a number of people this months ago,
mm-hmm.
that they were going to shut the president down. Now, they claimed, on Twitter that it went down for 10 minutes and it was a rogue situation, but they always test everything first. Just let that sink in. But more so, in James O'Keefe's, and I got to commend him.
Yeah.
Excellent job, sir. Excellent.
Story of the year already in January.
In his video, nobody's paying attention to the words when he says that they are discussing shutting the president down. All of the other stuff is obviously amazing content, but that in itself is that, let this sink in. A guy at Twitter who sits behind a keyboard,
unelected,
has the ability to shut down the president of this country.
Right. It's amazing.
That is not power that he should have.
No. Not at all.
And this has nothing to do with First Amendment. This has nothing to do with private companies. This has nothing to do with your CDA. This has to deal with too much power is in the social media's hands. And I've been trying to get this information to the president's office. I've been speaking with Roger Stone about this, and he called on immediately. This is probably the biggest problem in the United States right now.
Yeah, because if they can cut off communication, it's over. 2020 is going to be over.
Well, the thing is that most congressmen and most upper government that has never had a ban. They don't understand that when a ban happens on Facebook, you can't talk to people. They shut down your communication.
Right.
They literally shut your messaging off. And now they you know, messaging is tied in with your SMS, so they could actually turn off your SMS. There is way too much reach on social media, way too much. And the reality is that it doesn't matter about guys like me. It doesn't even matter about Alex Jones or you. The reality is that the nation has caught on. Too many people have realized it. Now we've hit critical mass. This is the point at which the nation's going to push back and say, no, this isn't okay. I don't like being told what I'm supposed to think, what I'm supposed to say, who I'm supposed to talk to, and how they can shut down my president. We voted him in there. We want to keep him there.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And now you've been talking with some people inside Facebook because you're not intimately involved with Facebook, but like creating things, being a content creator, actually bringing people to Facebook. You've been instrumental in doing that. So what are you hearing on the inside? This is an inside exclusive.
So here is some information. There are people within Facebook. There's a war going on because Facebook is not 100% liberal. Not everybody in there believes in what they're doing. So you've got this internal war, but again, people don't want to lose their jobs. They make very good livings. But the reality is that they also are talking to people on the outside world going, there's things going on with Facebook. Well, what I have heard is, and this is coming from inside of Facebook, Facebook is terrified of having Mark Zuckerberg going before Congress because, and this is as it was told to me, is that as awkward as he seems online, he is 10 times more awkward in real life. Because as much as he owns and operates and built a social network, he doesn't understand what it is to socialize. The guy doesn't even understand what it's like to be middle class.
Right.
He's gone right from college to billionaire. I mean, you know, and if Mark Zuckerberg's watching this, understand something. You could be a legacy here. You know, forget the negatives of this. You want to do positive. Give it back to the people. There were hundreds of thousands of people that were being employed by Facebook. Hundreds of thousands of them. Moms that were sitting at home that couldn't go to work because they had three children. And they were making $500 a week entertaining. And you took that away from everyone. So, you know, I would say the same thing. Trump, Mr. Trump, if you want to get jobs back, force this to happen. Force it. Because what's going to happen is those hundreds of thousands of people that lost their jobs, to give it back over to the sponsorships and the corporations and everybody else that's huge, they took it away from everyone. And yes, I get it. It's a private company. But the reality is maybe it's time to start changing monopoly laws to incorporate this kind of stuff. Maybe it's time to start changing legislation. And maybe that's actually what's happening.
What we have is that these Facebook and these big boys, Twitter and so forth, and you know, Google and all the different aspects of this, whether it's audio, video, or whatever, are beginning to censor and to cut back and to ban, shadow banning and so forth. And that's what we have coming up next is an interview there that, well, we have James O'Keefe that went in with his Veritas hidden cameras. And boy, is this eye-opening. But that's coming up right now. It'll tie everything that you've heard before together.
American Pravda by James O'Keefe. Adventure, betrayal, truth. Pre-order today at AmericanPravdaBook.com.
We're trying to get the city people not to show up. It's a product thing.
Let's say for the pro-Trump thing, and I am anti-Trump. I was like, oh, I banned this whole account. They'll go to you. And then it's at your discretion. And if you're anti-Trump, you're like, oh, you know what? Mueller's right. Let it go.
The idea of the shadow ban is that you ban someone, but they don't know they've been banned because they keep posting, but no one sees their content. So they just think that no one's engaging with their content when in reality no one's seeing it. I don't know if Twitter does this anymore.
How do you know if it's a bot and not another person?
You use machine learning. You look for Trump or America and you have like 5,000 like keywords to describe a redneck. And then you look and you like parse all the messages, all like the pictures, and then you look for like stuff that matches like that stuff.
So is it gonna like ban certain mindsets and or people who could be negative?
No, it's not gonna ban
the mindset? Is it going to bend, like, the way of talking?
Do you have access to DMs to Twitter?
Oh, I do.
It's a lot of bad press if like, you know, people figure out that you're shadow banning them. It's, like, unethical in some way.
We're trying to get the shitty people not to show up.
Yeah, they said, oh, this is pro-Trump. You know, I don't want it because, you know, it offends me. That's that. That's it. I ban this whole thing.
I'm pretty sure every single employee on Twitter hates Trump.
What we can do on our side is actually very terrifying.
Our last video exposed Twitter's eagerness to turn over President Trump's direct messages to the Justice Department. We think today's release will help you understand why. Because although Twitter presents itself as politically neutral, its culture behind closed doors is one of blatant censorship, systematic bias, and political targeting. While many suspected this was the case, today we present the proof out of their own Twitter mouths.
So we're probably about 90% anti-Trump, maybe 99% anti-Trump.
I really hard to decide what to do about Donald Trump. Yeah, half of the people want to ban him, half of the people want to keep him.
Does everybody at Twitter feel...
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go to Google in order to find the conservative.
What department?
I'm in Trump's safety. I do all the policy work for safety policy. I'm in a controversial team.
Oh my goodness!
I'm the team everyone says a lot about, yeah.
Olinda Hassan is a policy manager for Twitter Trust and Safety. Her team is responsible for Twitter's rules and regulations, determining what content is and isn't allowed. Just last month, Trust and Safety updated their policy in an effort to crack down on racism and other forms of hate speech.
But how do you keep, like my timeline, like, how do you keep certain things off my timeline? So, like, when people who, like, read
we're trying to downrank it, but you need to also have a control of your timeline.
I've tried to, like, block people, like, turn it in and stuff like that, and mute and stuff like that, but they still show up.
We wondered which people Hassan was referring to. What forms of free speech does Twitter want to stop from showing up? Former content review agent Mo Narai shed some light.
Let's say it was a pro-Trump thing, and I am anti-Trump. I was like, oh, I banned this whole account. I go to you. And then it's at your discretion. And if you're anti-Trump, you're like, oh, you know what? Mo was right. Let it go.
Narai's job at Twitter was to review content, flagged as harmful, offensive, or in violation of Twitter policy, and ban it if it was. Content review is an integral part of any social media platform, but as Narai describes, it is highly susceptible to abuse.
On stuff like that, it was more discretion on your viewpoint, I guess, your, like, how you felt about a particular matter.
Oh, so it wasn't automated.
No.
It was a user and services person would deem it pro-Trump and take it down.
Example, if it was, they said, oh, this is pro-Trump, you know, I don't want it, because, you know, it offends me, this, that. I say, I ban this whole thing, and it goes over, and you're like, oh, you know what, I don't like it too. You know, I was right, let's go. That's it. You're like, oh, right, let's carry on. What's next? Keep it coming.
Yeah, bring me another one to take down. Yeah.
So I flag something that's going to go by you.
Correct, and then, you know, you look at it, you're like, oh, hey, this is pro-Trump, you know, and this is my problem, like, oh, I don't like it.
Yeah, you know, so on the reverse of that, they would just let a lot of the, I guess, left-leaning or liberal stuff to go through unchecked?
It could come through check, and then I'll be like, oh, you know what, this is okay, let it go.
Narai suggests Twitter's content review is more than a safeguard against hate speech. It's a tool used to promote a political agenda.
You made the comment that, you know, Twitter maybe wouldn't, you know, verbally say some things that they, you know, wanted to put in their company policy, but they were kind of unwritten rules as far as the content that they would allow or disallow.
A lot of unwritten rules, and being that we're in San Francisco, we're in California, very little state, very blue state, you have to be, I mean, as a company, you can't really say it because it'll make you look bad, but behind closed doors, a lot of stuff was like, hey, you have to do this way, or something like that. It was never written, it was more said.
But it may not just be average users feeling the heat. Does Twitter target certain political figures for suspension? And more importantly, why?
Why would you clarify to me?
this. Yeah, it's a really good friend.
Pranay Singh is an engineer for Twitter's direct messaging team. What is Twitter's tactic when it comes to censorship? To find out, we spoke with former Twitter software engineer, Abhinav Vadravu.
One strategy is shadow ban so that you have ultimate control. The idea of a shadow ban is that you ban someone but they don't know they've been banned because they keep posting but no one sees their content. So they just think that no one's engaging with their content when in reality no one's seeing it.
Shadow banning is a way of blocking users from a social media platform without notifying them. Tweets from a shadow banned user still appear to their followers, but don't show up in search results or anywhere else on Twitter. It's an effective way of deterring Nigerian scammers and other online fraudsters. But if abused, shadow banning is dangerous.
You just sort of turn off all of the features for them, so like, they still see everything, it's all there. You can like it, you can favorite it, or you can like retweet or whatever. But at the end of the day, no one else interacts with your, no one else sees what you're doing. So all that data is just thrown away. It's risky though.
Why is it risky?
Because people will figure that shit out and be like, you know, it's a lot of bad press if like, you know, people figure out that you're shadow banning them. It's like unethical in some way. You know, so, I don't know, in the past, people have been really, really pissed off about that, and even people who haven't been shadow banned have called it, like, a really terrible thing to do. So, yeah, it's a risky strategy.
And so you go ahead and keep on tweeting,
yeah,
and you've been banned and don't even know it.
Yeah. I definitely know Reddit does this, but I don't know if Twitter does this anymore.
Could shadow banning be used to stealthily target political views? Here is former Twitter engineer Conrado Miranda.
I've heard talk that it's a good thing because they'll use it to ban like Trump supporters or conservatives. So I didn't know if like that's just a rumor or if that's true.
That's a thing.
That's a thing?
That's a thing. Yeah.
So how? How was that done?
Okay, basically Twitter is like a huge set of like the tweets and a shitload of filters on top of it.
Okay.
That's one of the filters on top of it.
Okay.
That's about it. Like, that's as much as I know about it.
So a feature on top of it?
Yeah, like imagine like you have all the tweets ever that happened like from the beginning of time in reverse chronological.
Right.
So like until we get to the actual system that like ranks the timeline, we just like we have a bunch of filters removing some tweets. So like we have a stream of tweets and we have like one filter just kicking out some of them.
Our conversation with Miranda was illuminating. Twitter's censorship practices go far beyond a few politically motivated techies. Twitter is run by an advanced set of algorithms, tools that are used to sift through vast amounts of data, or in this case, tweets. Their algorithms block, mute, and prioritize everything on the Twitter platform, and they're growing smarter by the day.
Just go to a random tweet and like just look at the followers.
Yeah.
They'll all be like guns, God, America. Like
yeah.
With the American flag and like the cross.
Yeah, no one really laughs.
Like, who says that? Who talks like that? It's for sure a bot.
A bot?
Really?
Yeah.
Or a redneck.
Redneck's gonna yeah. So can you get rid of them?
I wouldn't know.
Can you get rid of them?
Yeah.
Like, how do you do that?
You just delete them, but, like, the problem is there are hundreds of thousands of them, so you've got to, like, write algorithms that do it for you.
Pranay Singh described how one Twitter algorithm removes users they believe to be bots, Russian bots.
How do you know if it's a bot and not a normal?
machine learning.
It was like a, it was like an algorithm that you write where like you could like look for things. Right? So like if there's like people who are like American guns, can you like write an algorithm and just take all those people out?
Actually, how we do it, yeah. Pretty cool. You should be an engineer. Really
yeah.
Good at this
so, like, so can you just write them against, like, so, like, say someone has, like, Trump in the name, like, or, like, conservative, or, like...
America first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you just, like, write algorithms?
Are you sure you're not a programmer?
That's the thing, how you do it.
What?
She's a very smart...
What?
That's how you do it.
Like,
yeah, you look for a Trump or America, and you have like 5,000 like keywords to describe a redneck, and then you look and you like parse all the messages, all like the pictures, and then you look for like stuff that matches like that stuff. And like if it so like you assign like a value to each thing, so like Trump would be like 0.5, like a picture of a gun would be like 1.5, and like if it comes up, the total comes up above like a certain value, then it's a bot.
Weeding out fake users is an important tool for Twitter, but according to Pranay, this tool is not applied equally across the political spectrum.
I think the majority of the algorithms are conservatives.
I would say the majority of it are for Republicans, because they're all from Russia and they wanted Trump to win. So
you'd mostly just hear people.
I knew that it was in my direction.
This secret project you're working on is going to help people communicate better?
Yeah. That's the goal.
So what I'm working on, okay, this is the goal of what I'm working on.
Okay.
Ultimately.
Okay.
The goal of what I'm working on is going to make it so that everything in Twitter is dynamic.
This is Twitter software engineer Stephen Pierre. He told our undercover journalist about a secret project involving machine learning. In the tech world, machine learning refers to algorithms that teach themselves how to solve problems, eliminating the need for human input. It may sound like something out of a Stanley Kubrick movie, but machine learning is all too real, and it's about to take over your social media feed.
Every single conversation is going to be rated by a machine, and the machine is going to say whether or not it's a positive thing or a negative thing. And whether it's positive or negative, that's not the concept. But more it's like if somebody's being aggressive or not, right? Somebody's like just cursing at somebody, like, oh, whatever, whatever. They might have a point, but it'll just like vanish.
So is it going to like ban certain mindsets and or people who could be negative?
No. It's going to, it's not going to ban the mindset. It's going to ban like a way of talking.
Ban a way of talking. See, Twitter may fancy itself the global town square, but it's clear from our reporting that Twitter is not an open and unbiased platform. Anonymity of its internal policies have bred irresponsibility and abuse. If Twitter wants to convince its users it truly respects free speech, there must be some transparency. Bring shadow banning out of the shadows. Algorithms are only as good as the weights that are put on them. So take your thumb off the algorithmic scale. Get rid of the engineers that abuse their power and show us your HR policies. Jack Dorsey, stay true to your mission statement to, quote, give everyone the power to create and share ideas and information instantly without barriers or become irrelevant. And stay tuned, Jack Dorsey, because we at Project Veritas are just getting started.
American Pravda by James O'Keefe. Adventure, betrayal, truth. Pre-order today at AmericanPravdaBook.com.
Well, there you go. James O'Keefe is doing a really wonderful job. And basically, he went in with these hidden cameras. He's done this on several occasions. He thinks that maybe this might be his best, you could say, expose using hidden cameras. Because who he was interviewing was Twitter engineers who created and wrote algorithms that they could start selecting or deselecting, in this case, information or de-emphasizing it. In other words, you might put up a good interview or something on Twitter or whatever, and you might think, man, this is going to catch fire and really go across the web, and for some reason, it doesn't catch fire. Well, according to these James O'Keefe interviews with these engineers that work for Twitter, is that they can write algorithms to de-emphasize, and so they're using what is termed now is shadow banning. In other words, they don't kick you off altogether, totally. They just make it to where your videos or your outreach and your messages to a very large audience, and sometimes millions, in the case of Jason Frank interviewed earlier on InfoWars, is that they knocked him off of millions of contacts over the years, and so that can just remove your audience and relegate you to almost a solitary confinement of speechless existence. You know, in other words, a free speech. How about no speech? That's basically where we're headed and have been for a number of years. They've kicked off people before, you know, and they started this. According to Frank, he started back, he said, 7 years ago in building up quite an audience. And as his audience got larger into the millions, they started looking at him, at who he was influencing. And according to him, was that he was against Barack Obama. So they started, you know, dropping him off, you know, his millions, and going against him and censoring him and so forth. So when he got that influential, then they started really, really looking at him closely. And he said, well, he thinks that perhaps Facebook is on the way down because too many people now realize what Facebook has been doing. And so they're going to take appropriate action. I noticed on my news feeds on Facebook, I just don't get the incendiary expose sensational feeds that I used to. So perhaps Facebook on my particular feeds or in my area have not that I'm that much of a presence myself, but other people that I said, you know, want to look at stuff, it's just not coming across like it was 6 months to a year and a half ago. It doesn't appear to be. This is anecdotal. I don't have, you know, scientific study of that. But we know overall, with insiders and these engineers and these hidden camera interviews that Veritas has been conducting, we know what's going on. We know what they're going to do. It's a controlling, it's like propaganda control, you know. They make Goebbels look like a little choir boy, you know. I mean, what they're doing now, because they're writing these very intricate algorithms that will go out and search for certain terms. The flag, my country, love of country, America first, make America great again, and anything like that that they are standing against, they'll go out and find those search terms and then start applying a shadow banning type of procedure or techniques against those posted messages. And so this is insidious, isn't it? But anyway, we've got to stand up and fight this, and it could be that we need to bring those, we need to break up those large companies, or we need to bring them under more regulatory control as far as protecting the individual, not in what you can put up there, but making sure that they don't discriminate against disseminating based upon free speech rights. In other words, these companies are private companies. So you've got to move very, very carefully in this area. So perhaps the Federal Trade Administration can do some good for us little citizens out here trying to get out the truth, you know. But thank you for listening, and we'll have a bunch of click-offs up here on thesecrettruth.com for this hour one. Thank you for listening again. God bless you all out there.